The world's third biggest economy posts its biggest contraction on record. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Fresh data out of Japan today showed the economy shrank 7.8% in the second quarter. The country, which was already struggling with weak growth before the coronavirus crisis, slipped into recession earlier this year. Here are a couple of people on the streets of Tokyo to explain their views on the changing economic landscape.
When the new coronavirus spread in February, I personally expected a Great Depression would hit us. I think the depression is not ending so soon.
Japan is in a rather good condition compared to other countries. The economy is moving at least, even if the coronavirus situation slows it down.
Indeed, the quarterly decline was less severe than the double-digit contractions felt across Europe and the U.S. between April and June. Marcel Tilliant, senior Japan economist at Capital Economics, explains why.
That reflects the relatively light restrictions that Japan's government placed on activity and also the fact that its disease outbreak was relatively mild, so there wasn't that much of a panic among households. There were two main sources of pain. External demand collapsed. Japan is a big exporter of machinery and transport equipment, and car sales were very weak around the globe during the pandemic, and investment spending in lots of countries was also very weak. The other factor was simply household consumption. That was partly due to the government restrictions, but there was also a lot of self-restraint on the parts of consumers. So even after the restrictions were eased in late May, we didn't see much of a rebound in lots of services.
So looking ahead to the current quarter then, retail sales have already seen a bit of a pickup. Do you expect a quick rebound for the Japanese economy then going forward?
Well, I would say relative to other countries, yes, but it will still take quite a bit of time for consumption to normalize. As you rightly say, goods consumption is almost back to normal in June, and it probably recovered further in July and going into the second half. But I think that with the second virus wave now hitting the country, spending on lots of services activity is still going to be quite weak as long as the virus isn't brought under control. And it's hard to say when that will happen, but probably not this year. So I think it's reasonable to expect activity to remain well below pre-virus levels at least until the middle of next year.
Marcel Tilliant at Capital Economics. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Japan's Nikkei slipped 0.8%, the most in 2 weeks on the back of that data this morning. Thailand also reported its latest growth figures, which showed a 12% contraction between April and June, its sharpest since 1998. Here in Europe, stocks are little changed, while U.S. stock futures are pointing to a higher start on Wall Street. It's been 5 months since COVID-19 brought the cruise industry to a halt, but for the first time since mid-March, a cruise ship has left the Italian port of Genoa. During its week-long voyage, the MSC Grandiosa will take 2,500 passengers to three Italian cities and the Maltese capital of Valletta. As you might expect, new safety precautions have been put in place in an effort to reboot the industry safely. The BBC's Mike Sanders has that story.
This is a first step towards rebooting an industry that generates an estimated $150 billion for the world economy. For Italy, badly hit by coronavirus, it is particularly important. It ranks seventh among the cruise ship operating nations, carrying more than 800,000 passengers in 2018. MSC Cruises says it has put in place a special health and safety protocol, including COVID-19 tests for passengers and crew before boarding. But statistically, 15% of all cruise passengers are aged 70 or above, putting them in the most vulnerable category.
Mike Sanders reporting there. The Democratic National Convention officially gets underway in Milwaukee today, but it won't have the same feeling as years prior. That's because this time it's almost entirely virtual, with the presumptive presidential and vice presidential nominees, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, delivering speeches from nearly 700 miles away. It's not the first time, and likely not the last, conferences of this magnitude will be forced online thanks to the coronavirus pandemic. But do virtual events actually work? Do people tune in or just tune out once they've logged on? The BBC's Jane Wakefield has been finding out.
It is often said that some big events are where the deals that shape our world are done. An entrance to conferences such as TED, in which the technology elite mingle with academics and thought leaders, come with a hefty price tag. The starting price for TED is $5,000. So is 2020 the year that networking has stopped?
We just held an event that usually takes place in Toronto online and successfully for the first time.
That's Paddy Cosgrave. He's the chief executive of Web Summit, a giant technology conference held annually in Lisbon, Portugal. Until this year, that is. Web Summit and its sister conferences, Rise in Hong Kong and Collision in Toronto, have gone online this year.
We had just over 32,000 people from almost every country in the world. We decided to charge about a quarter of what we would usually charge. I don't think you need to charge as much as an offline conference because a lot of the costs don't exist.
Chris Anderson runs TED. His conference attracts the richest people on the planet.
What should a virtual conference look like? Do a little bit every day for a longer period of time. So we had this 8 weeks virtual TED experience. Probably the most interesting thing we tried was just what we called idea speed dating, where you could select a moment just to meet someone at random for 5 minutes. That was definitely a hit.
I spoke to attendee Anna Turkle, who was excited to be attending her first ever TED and disappointed when it went virtual.
When you attend a conference, you naturally click with some people. I don't feel that we've been able to build those long-lasting human connections that would stay with us. And to me, that's a pity. And it's not a dent at TED at all, but at this sad, you know, virtual reality that we're living in these days.
And a Turkle ending that report by Jane Wakefield there. Well, I'm Victoria Craig on Twitter. Let me know your feelings on virtual versus in-person conferences. Personally, one benefit might just be no lines for the bathroom or the lunch table. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.